evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever time of day you're listening to the podcast, Matushka's Right Peg returns. In the virtual podcast studio, we have Kyle, once again from Scotland, desperately awaiting a haircut. Baz Timmers in Berlin, this man doesn't need a haircut as he points at his lovely shiny head. And I can't see Mark, but I understand he's in Berlin and him and the family have all had some lovely haircuts. The reason we're talking about haircuts is because I had mine today in sunny Lisbon. Won't tell you the weather here of late, something to do with 25 degrees and all that. Anyway, without further ado, let's have a look at the last three games. Just as a reminder, we made some predictions. I think the guys all thought that we'd probably get a win against Bielefeld, and that wasn't to be. It'd be interesting to consider why we fell a bit short there in Bielefeld. We all predicted a win against Köln. Wasn't the maybe the easiest or most straightforward of victories, but we managed to edge that 1-2-1. And then the away day at Eintracht Frankfurt, we couldn't win again 2-1 as we did the previous season, which for a number of people was probably the last time they saw Union win a fixture in real life. And it was a game that was, I think fair to say, some moments of madness in a very short spell, which saw Union ship three goals, which really put that game on its head. And we obviously suffered a 5-2 reverse, which was our biggest defeat since we played Hoffenheim last season and got stuffed. I think it was 4-0. So I guess who wants to go first? And where do we want to start? Baz Timmers, you've got your hands up, you're eager. Go for it.
As always, I'd say about those three matches, I think it pretty much shows the development of the team and the main problems that we have as well. Because the Bielefeld match was typical for those away games where the opponent would give us the ball and us not having enough creativity to really create a lot of chances. I can recall that when Endo came on, and I think Musa as well, that things improved and there was more pace in our game and there was more surprise in our game. And we did get two chances, but I don't think that would have justified the 3 points for us. Against Cologne, there was a lot of improvement because it was a solid game, not as easy maybe as some would have thought, but hey, we're playing Bundesliga and we cannot expect to, you know, crash other relegation opponents with 3 or 4 nil out of our own stadium every week. And you could actually see that Kruse was starting to gel in again. And then we had the Frankfurt game, which was, I think, interesting because we showed a lot of creativity, but at the end, the players themselves knew that we made it into way too much of an open game and we can't do that because we're way too vulnerable with Knoche at the back, you know, who's not the quickest of all. And we conceded, I think, the first two goals after we had set pieces at the Frankfurt side, which I can't recall something like that happening to us in the last year. The upside of it for me was that it really shows on which parts of the game we still have to work on. And it was the ultimate warning for the Hertha game. I don't know whether any of you have seen the summary of their Hertha home game last weekend against Leverkusen, but they played at home and they scored from a counterattack 3 times. That's probably going to happen to us if we would play in the same attacking way as we did at Frankfurt and the same way Leverkusen did half-heartedly at Hertha. So I think it's the perfect warning to take it easy, to not be too attacking, to be really patient, to play to our strengths, which makes me pretty confident about the Hertha game. But now I'm already getting ahead of things.
You mentioned Musa and Endo coming on against Bielefeld, Baz. What are your thoughts? I mean, Musa was actually down to start against Frankfurt, but then got injured very close to the players actually coming out and was replaced by Pompolo. So Endo and Musa, I mean, how are you seeing those two at the moment for Union? Particularly Endo for me. What's your views?
For me, he adds to the unpredictability in our game, which is, I think, really, really good. Nowadays, I saw some figures about it as well. You see less and less one-on-one situations where a striker or a winger is actually just taking up his defender and trying to get past him. I think that is an element that he definitely adds to our game. He also seems to be one of those players that's not only looking to be able to give a cross, but he sometimes also cuts inside and is going for his own shot, for his own chance. Against Bielefeld, I can remember that he went quite deep as well and got a real good chance. So I think he's pretty versatile, and he's a completely different player than the likes of Marius Bülter, for instance, or Becker, who are really relying on their speed. He's a completely different player. So I'd like to see him stay at the Eredivisie actually for one or two years and see whether he can get to the next level. Musa is really difficult because difficult to judge, let's put it like that, for me personally. I don't know what the other guys are thinking about that. I think he played really well against Cologne. He looks like more of a natural striker than Poyanpalo. Poyanpalo really couldn't make an impression when he got the chance in the last couple of matches. So I have the hunch that Musa is better, is more versatile, but it's really hard to judge on what we have seen until now.
Interesting thoughts, Timmers. And probably agree with you on Endo that he is someone who's going to need a decent period of time. Mark?
I'll come in now just to go quickly over the last three. I think Bielefeld, the Bielefeld game was, like Baz said, it was one of those typical games that we've seen quite a few of this season. Yeah, the lack of the general lack of an outlet, the general lack of creativity. It looked like a repeat of the Schalke game, and it's no accident, I think, that both Bielefeld and Schalke are down there. We were set up more or less the same, and the result was ultimately the same as well, I think. In terms of the Köln game, that was what was worthy of mention is this is the first time we've come back from a deficit to win in the Bundesliga. So that shows that the morale is certainly there in the team. And ultimately, I think we deserve to nick that. That was a well-deserved and a well-needed win, only to come back down to earth against Frankfurt. But I wouldn't put too much emphasis on the Frankfurt game for several reasons. It was one of those out of the ordinary games. We had penalties, we had disputable VAR decisions, we had one of the best own goals you'll ever see, which we'll come back to later. The thing is that disappointed me the most about the game against Frankfurt was that you could see that they were certainly combining well up front, especially Silva. And basically, when you've been hit by that second goal, the experience of the leaders and also of us as a former defender has to be, it doesn't matter about that. We have to get to half time now, 2-1 down. And we had then 6 minutes of madness, you could only say, where the Frankfurt played us dizzy, and there was no getting back from it, of course. You can argue the toss on number of shots, on the number of the opportunities and everything like that. But ultimately, when you're 4-1 down, coming back to 4-2 just before halftime is good, but that game was lost in those 6 minutes, essentially. In terms of the guys, Endo and Musa that Baz mentioned, and you mentioned Wilson, I think Endo gives, my opinion on Endo is he gives you an option, I think. I agree with Baz on that. He does have something in the locker. I don't see that. We've seen it too little, I think, as well. And also, I'm still of the opinion that he's too lightweight. I still don't think he's cut out for German football. Musa, meanwhile, is the right sort of physical attributes to look like he's a good player. But he and Poyanpalo as well, you could see, they so desperately need a goal at the moment. They so desperately need a goal. The chances that were left by Poyanpalo and Musa, they did okay. It wasn't like, for example, Awoni like scuffing it or something like this. They got their foot right through the ball, Poyanpalo as well against Frankfurt, and it just didn't go in. You just need it to hit a going off the post, bobble over after three deflections or something. You just need a goal if you're a striker, and these two guys are not getting it at the moment. If it comes, then I think we'll see more of what Musa and Poyan Pala are about, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you say they're not getting it at the moment. I mean, Poyan Pala really does look like a bloke who isn't getting it, either in front of goal or at home. He looks a bit miserable on the pitch at times. I thought the shots thing that you mentioned, Mark, was interesting because I know you can prove anything with stats and all that, but if someone had said that we would go away to Frankfurt, we'd have almost three times as many shots as them, we'd score two goals, three if you want to count the Andrik one, and we'd have more shots on target, I'd have been very surprised if you then told me, well, yeah, they're going to have five shots on target and we're going to get beat 5-2. So I fully take what you said that, yeah, at 4-1 down, the game really was almost out of sight at that point. Yeah, I think I'd also agree a bit. We wrote it off before as a defeat. It was a free hit. And it certainly is one to be written off. And maybe, Baz, I think you're also correct in that it's a bit of a wake-up call and a warning before the derby match, which they certainly won't want to be on the end of another tonking from our local rivals. Kyle, we watched the Frankfurt game together, and yeah, the six minutes of madness. What did you make of those three games yourself?
So with the Bielefeld game, we didn't really offer much until Endo came on, and when Endo came on, I sort of felt that it changed the game. Spoke last time out about our reliance on attacking on the right-hand side of the park, and Endo sort of gave that option on the left. And this was built on for the Köln and Frankfurt games with Julian Ryerson, who played particularly the Köln game, probably his best game in an Union shirt. He was incredible, particularly the Cruyff turn before Trimmel's goal was outstanding. And it's good to see that maybe that's an option to play at left back next season, because we don't know about Gieselman, but Lenz is definitely away, and that was potentially an issue. But Ryerson seems to have all we're after on that side. He also got an assist on the first Cruz goal against Frankfurt as well. So to come away with two assists in two games, like from a left back position, it's pretty good to have that in a position that's maybe been weak the last little while. On Musa, I thought particularly against Köln, it was quite good. He seems to hold the ball up a bit well. He wins duels, which is something that we've maybe been lacking a bit since Anderson left. I think he finished the game with having won the most duels against Köln with 19, which is a pretty crazy amount to get when you don't finish the game. With Frankfurt, Cruz, great to see him kind of back to some sort of his best with the couple of goals. But God, the Andrus one, you watch the gun at a time, and it's one of those ones you don't know whether to laugh or cry. It was pretty incredible, and it changed the game, because I would reckon that we were the better team for 86 minutes of that game, and it just so happened that we collapsed for 6 minutes and ended up losing 5-2, which, like was mentioned, you know, 25 shots to 9, and we lose. It's unheard of for us. But the results, maybe, particularly the Frankfurt one, maybe doesn't reflect it, but I feel there's been quite a bit of progress, and there was maybe that reminder that, you know, this is still the Bundesliga. We've got to be defensively solid, and hopefully that's a lesson that gets learned over the international break and before this run-in, to see how things will pan out over the final few games.
Indeed. Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned Ryerson. I mean, he was brought in when he was fairly young to Union, and under 21 international at the time, I think. And he has progressed. I think he's got one cap for the senior squad now. So I think fully agree that he's definitely one who can come into his own now that we know that Lenz is departing to Eintracht Frankfurt, who we just played. It'll be great to see how he can progress. Baz.
There was one thing about Endo that I forgot to mention, but I think one of the problems that we had in the matches before or even during the Bielefeld game as well was that we weren't creating as many set pieces as we have in the first half of the season, and we were really good with from corners and from free kicks. Against Cologne and against Frankfurt, we had a string of corners and free kicks again, which led to a lot of danger. Because if you're talking about like the crazy 6 minutes, you could also have mentioned the first 6 minutes where we had two corners, both of which were saved from the line from Frankfurt, and one of them was countered into, I think, the 1-0. But he does, and not only he, but he does seem to bring that quality to, you know, take on a player, dribble, get a corner, and create danger in an indirect way. So that's also, I think, a quality that he has and that we need as well in our squad.
Yeah, agree with that. And yeah, it kind of takes me back to the Frankfurt game now, because I think we had a chance just before, literally in the first minute, and we kind of joked saying, oh, we don't want to score too early, not realizing that they would then score in the second minute, of course. But yeah, we certainly create the chances. And I think when you lose games and you're not creating anything, that's when it's a real worry. So it is great that we're creating chances. It'll be interesting to see how we set up against Hertner, I think, because, I mean, I have to say, Kyle, to say that we were kind of maybe, you were intimating almost that maybe we were the better side for large stretches of that game. I think some people may take issue. I think Baz Timmers might have raised his eyebrows at that, or I don't know, maybe Baz can tell us what he thought. But I mean, when you saw Trimmel trying to defend against the pace of their wing, it was like watching something that you just rarely see at Union. It was just, we were just absolutely at sixes and sevens, and we were just all over the place, not tight on our men, and we just had people running at us. And those balls that were going into the box for the, I think was it the silver goal? It almost looked a really basic move, but if we leave ourselves open to that kind of pace against our rivals, we'll be in trouble. So it'll be interesting to see how we set up. But yeah, Kyle, I don't know if you want to come back in on that.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the way we dealt with Kostic was maybe a bit naive. Kostic is one of the outstanding players in the league, and to have Trimmel constantly on the attack and then just leaving Kostic all that space to run in was, yeah, maybe a bit naive, but that's something you learn, and maybe that's something that we should have focused our attacks more on the left-hand side, because Barcock is not even half the player that Kostic is. But talking about creating chances and opportunities from different areas, Nico Schlotterbeck has been outstanding these last few games. He's constantly wanders forward, or is even, you find that he's on the end of a cross somehow, and you're like, how has he got to this position? But he seems to get about the park pretty well, and I wish we could find a way to keep a hold of him. I don't think Freiburg would want that to happen, but he's looked superb, and obviously he's away with the Germany under-21s at the moment, but he's been an absolute standout, and I would hope that going forward for the rest of the season, we stick with the back three that turns into a back five to keep Schlotterbeck in, because as much as Nocke and Friedrich have their sort of skills defensively, and so does Nico as well, but going forward, Schlotterbeck is just like an extra man going forward and kind of brings another dimension to the attack, which is, yeah, much needed when we were struggling to score goals, and it's good that we have it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, one thing that people mentioned was kind of the creativity was a bit lacking, I think. And part of that was probably Kruse just finding his way back in. I think it was pretty clear to see his enthusiasm. He was a real leader on the pitch. He was the one kind of clapping, saying, come on, we need to get back into this game. And he tried to sort of drag us back sort of by the scruff of the neck, as it were. And I think it was really great, actually, to see him sort of, that Frankfurt game again, Yeah, the result didn't go our way, but he looked hell of a lot sharper than he had the previous games. And I think Hopefully for the run-in, we start to see kind of the Max Kruse that we saw previously. And I think if we do see that, there's a few games there we were discussing before we came on. There's a few clubs that you'd look at and think, okay, we might not have put that down for a win originally, games like Leverkusen, but there's some teams there that could be there for the taking.
Yeah, just on Kruse, to throw out a couple of stats on Kruse. So in the 14 games he's played this season, he's got 10 goals and 5 assists, which is crazy, crazy numbers. And then got to give a hat tip to Stefan Bienkowski for this one, but his non-penalties goals and assists per 90 minutes of gameplay is 0.85, which is fifth in the league. And the only players that are ahead of him are Kalajdzic from Stuttgart, Thomas Müller, Erling Haaland and Lewandowski, which is pretty good company to be keeping with. And it's great to have him, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's a belated birthday present. So belated happy birthday to Mr. Kruse. Hope you're listening. Baz, did you have anything you wanted to come back in with there?
I don't know if you all already wanted to talk about it, but you mentioned the setup against Hertha. And Kyle mentioned that it might have been slightly naive to play Trimmel in the zone where Kostic is coming from, because Kostic is, I think, at the moment, the best in the league, in the German league at least, on that side. I think Hertha's biggest threat at the moment is Mateusz Kunja, who came back from an injury after a couple of weeks, and he was a massive improvement. He's a different style of player than Kostic is, because Kostic usually comes from the wings, and Kunja is more kind of a player who plays in the center on the axis. But it will be interesting to see how we're going to cope with that. I think that's going to be easier than Kostic, because you don't really want to change your system for one player of the opponent. And we've got Andrić there and Prömel there, or Gentner, who can do the dirty work. So I'm actually not too worried about that. But Hertha do have a couple of players that, if you give them the opportunity and you are slightly naive, can cause lots of trouble. Luka Bakio has been like maybe not the best of signings at 20, 25 million, but he does have the potential. And we can remember from the 4-0 hammering, I think we got last year as well, that he caught Michael Parens on the counterattack, because that was one of the moments where he could develop his speed and take advantage of that. Christoph Lenz is also not the fastest of the bunch, let's put it like that. So that all goes for a more cautious setup against Hertha. But on the other side, as said, I'm not too worried about us being naive. And we have our own qualities. We have our cruiser. We have things slowly improving. So we will stick to our style of play, I think, actually. And it's probably then going to be just as ugly a match as last year's home game. And I think we would all sign up for the same results and the same moments of scoring the one and only goal.
Yeah, I'm sure if you asked us 3-0, we'd take a dirty 1-0. I think definitely I would, for sure. Yeah, some good points there about the Brazilian Kuna, the Belgium, Luka Bakio, strong players. So it's going to be a tough game when we play them in it's the 6 p.m. on the Sunday slot. So we've got a long weekend over Easter to look forward to that game. Mark, are you looking forward to this Berlin derby?
Absolutely. Always look forward to a good derby. On that note, it was briefly rumoured to have been cancelled. The Senate was discussing cancellations of stuff. I think the people from RBB got the wrong end of the stick by the sound of it, and they understood that the entire thing was being cancelled. In actual fact, it was the pilot project that we were planning with 700 fans at the Altifirstry, which would have been nice, but obviously it's understandable that that's not going to go ahead at the moment with the way that cases are going in Germany.
Do you want to just explain the pilot project for listeners who might not be aware of that? Because it is an interesting one.
Well, as far as I know it, we planned on 700 fans, all of whom had to test negative or to take a test in advance before they were let in. It was never made clear exactly how this was going to be done, with some sort of passport or with some sort of app. It was basically put forward. And yeah, it's been knocked on the head now. Of course, we would have been expecting it around now, the announcement of the how it was going to take place. Yeah, I think the game in Rostock at the weekend, 777 there in Rostock over the weekend, it really showed what a difference even that small amount of fans could make in terms of atmosphere. They did a sterling job up there in Rostock, and the fans, players and the manager were very appreciative of it. And of course, it led to a home win as well. So yeah, would have been nice, but here we are. We stuck again with a home game against Hertha in front of an empty stadium. Who will that benefit? Who knows? Let's see. It's going to be a cautious beginning. One hopes that Andrich will be looking to prove something after his early red card that cost us dear in the away game, and I think Max Kruse, obviously you look to him to be that X factor. Hertha have got a lot of strengths, they've got a lot of weaknesses as well. It's no accident that they're down there, but yeah, the table doesn't lie as it is at the moment. They're down the bottom and we're in the upper mid table, so we should go into this as favourites.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Let's not sugarcoat the positions. We're in the top eight, they're in the bottom eight, and then the other eight is mid-table. So as you say, we should be brimming with confidence, and fully agree. I mean, I'm not sure who an empty stadium benefits, whether it even benefits anyone. Baz?
Yeah, I just want to add to what Mark said about the way this experiment would have been done. Because I was part of another experiment, but which is kind of the same project. I went to the theater last Friday, and you had to get a quick test, so not a PCR test, but a quick test on the same day, and had to take the results with you on your smartphone and show them at the entrance. On Saturday, there was a concert at the Philharmonie in Philharmonic, I have to say, in Berlin, also at 50% capacity. And 50% of those were tested on site. And apparently that was the idea at Union as well, to test 50% of the people on site. So in the stadium, and then somehow they have to wait for 10 or 15 minutes for the result. And I also read an interview where Christian Arbeit said something that they would only use the main stand for those 700 or 800 tickets that they would be selling, and there wouldn't be any use of the terraces, probably to keep everything under control. So that's the directions that they're thinking of.
And I mean, I don't really want to bring my day job into a podcast, but last week the European Commission did launch a proposal which they're hoping to fast track through the ordinary legislative procedure. So it'll go to the Parliament and then must be agreed in trilogue with the European Council, the member states. And what they're launching is something called the Digital Green Certificate. So that will have three components. It will be purely online, but then there will also be an option for those maybe like my some of my relatives, so who are a bit older, who might want to just carry a piece of paper. So there will be a printed version allowed with a QR code on there. And what this will do is it will say whether you've had a vaccine, whether you've got antibodies, or whether you've just taken a test. And the EU are hoping to have that the same for all across the EU to avoid any kind of confusion. And that will be also for people who are from outside of the EU. So the people from the UK will be able to access that before coming into this lovely territory that we're in. Anyway, Kyle, enough about that. What are your thoughts on the ghost derby? Another fucking ghost derby, unfortunately.
Certainly hope that it's third time lucky when it comes to these ghost derbies, because the first two have been pretty crap. We were talking about how Hertha are in their position because they deserve to be. And since the last derby that we played in December, they've only won three games, and two of those were in their last three. I hope that's more of a luck thing that they happen to play Leverkusen, who are like a wet paper bag in defence at the moment. And Augsburg, who, well, we played Augsburg, we know how they play. They are boring, and Hertha got a penalty at the end, and that's how they won that. But the only other team they've beat since then is Schalke. So, yeah, hopefully that's a bit of luck, and it's not something they can take too much confidence from. Let's focus on ourselves. I think our how we play and our cohesiveness as a team is something that we should focus on, as opposed to how to counter and changing the setup against Hertha, because like Baz mentioned, Cunha plays a lot more central than Kostic. Kostic was quite hard to deal with, whereas Cunha's a bit more central. So if we play that back three or five sort of formation that we've played for good chunks of the season, that should kind of help to nullify that by having that extra cover close by. And then up front, yeah, hopefully one of the other strikers can get a bit lucky and bag a goal. Be nice if Musa, if he's fit to play, if he's able to get something out of it, or Poyan, or just anyone to score. Obviously, we're going to be missing Becker for a while now that he had surgery last week. So yeah, hopefully we can get a bit more production from our strikers and we should be flying.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be pretty confident, but. As we were mentioning there, I mean, let's just hope that we don't have any players who get a bit over exuberant with trying to correct maybe some wrongs from the previous derby. We've touched upon the kind of 6 minutes of madness of Union on the weekend. Reminded me of the Howard Wilkinson era when Sunderland played Charlton and we managed to score 3 own goals in the space of 7 minutes. So for the one or two Sunderland fans who are listening, sorry about the reference to that, but I couldn't actually remember any sort of, no Union own goal has ever stood out. And I think, I mean, this one from the Frankfurt game is going to stand out, unfortunately. But Mark, I think you may have an own goal Union tale to regale us with.
Yeah, I do. I was surprised to hear that so many people, and by so many people, that's 3 people, liked the tale from the Oberliga days in Torgelow. But if you want, I'll take you back to the year after that, the season after that, after the glorious return from the depths of League 4 to League 3, then known as the Regionalliga. To a game, to the game against Osnabrück. Now, the reason this is, you're going to have to believe me on this, because I've looked, and although we did film get home games, I cannot find any footage of this online. So you're going to have to trust me on this, right? So this is a game against VfL Osnabrück. It was in 2006. It was memorable for a lot of games, a lot of reasons, because the games against Osnabrück were always, always great games. I think there was a 3-3 against Osnabrück with an 89th minute penalty put over to the one for Osnabrück, if I recall correctly. This one here was the year before in 2006 under Christian Schreier, I think was the manager back then. Basically started off so boring. It was we initially opened the scoring through Karim Benyamina, and then that was they equalized just before half time. And then the second half goes down in my memory bank as an absolute mental game. It really did. First of all, Osnabrück went 2-1 up. Then there was a red card for Osnabrück. Then 1 minute later, there was a red card for Union, Niko Paczynski, going straight down the tunnel. And then the game, I remember it just absolutely degenerating there into just a kicking fest. Sebastian Bernich, our assistant manager, he saw red as well in the 83rd minute. So it's still 2-1. It's still 2-1. And then comes the 85th minute. Right, okay, this is the moment, okay? Now, we're standing in our usual space. It was roughly at the halfway line on the Gegengerade, opposite the main stand. So to the right of us, so they were attacking the Wühlerseite, where the ultras are. And there was a long cross. Don't ask me who hit the cross, but we were getting desperate and long balling it into the box. This ball here was curved out to about just outside the box. on the corner of the box. And their player, and I've had to look it up, their player, Andreas Schäfer, he swung his left, he swung his foot in a sort of a panicky, and this is going absolutely into row Z. And he absolutely laced it into the top corner past their keeper in the 85th minute. That there was not only one of the best goals I've ever seen, because you have no idea how fast this ball screamed in. It went right into the stanchion, right into the corner. People will probably find this online now and say it's a load of rubbish. But as I remember that, it absolutely lasered into the top corner. And then everyone went absolutely crazy. It was reminiscent of the Gikovic goal. It was only 7,000 people there, but everyone went absolutely full on bananas when that went in. That remains the best own goal I have ever seen in any setting. Maybe in school football there was some, but that remains the best own goal in a professional setting. And I had the privilege of watching that with 7,700 other people against Osnabrück in 2006. Absolutely fantastic. And at the end of that game, everyone around, it was one of those games where you look around and it's like, you know what? The result doesn't actually matter. There was 3 red cards, there was 4 goals, and there was the best own goal you are ever going to see. What a game that was.
Absolutely superb. Absolutely superb, Mark. Wish I'd been there. I just had a look at the starting lineup and see, even we had a young 24-year-old Christian Stuff, one of my favourite players, was starting that day. Absolutely superb. So we've had own goals, we've had the derby, we've had the review. I think we've got probably a few minutes left just to maybe broaden the discussion out a bit. It's a discussion that comes around every now and again in the boozer, doesn't it? About different leagues, what they're like, etc., etc. People look at the who's likely to be a champion in a league, and is there much of a race, and the points differential between sort of certain elements, whether it's people chasing for Europe or people going down. I know, Kyle, you're still a massive fan of the Zweite Bundesliga, and I think as Unioners, we spent many seasons there, and it's very difficult to draw yourself away sometimes. And I think the top of the table race at the moment is a fascinating one that I think many people listening to this podcast will be all too aware of. So yeah, maybe we can just sort of finish on a bit of a broader talk about the Bundesliga and how you guys see it. Maybe Kyle might even want to make a prediction about who might come up, because obviously the people who come up we're going to be playing against next season, and that title race is very, very interesting. But yeah, over to you guys. Who wants to kick us off on this one?
Well, if we're talking who I think will come up, who I think will come up and who I want to come up are slightly different things, because when it comes to the Zweite Liga, I only support the team that are playing HSV, because HSV have this fan friendship with Rangers, and being a Celtic fan, I want nothing to do with them. One team being successful this year is more than enough. That's plenty. Bochum have been really good in the games that I've watched. And again, had a strong win against Fortuna Düsseldorf, who only went down last season. Kiel are in quarantine at the moment and are 5 points off the top, and they're sitting in fourth. So it's a really tight race at the moment, and you've got HSV in second and fourth and third. I would hope that it's Bochum and Kiel would be quite cool. Kiel do play nice football. Obviously, they knocked out Bayern in the cup this year. Yeah, any combination of not HSV will do me fine. But yeah, Bochum are flying, and I can't see any way that they don't come up. And then HSV, if they can find a way to HSV again, that would be marvellous.
Fantastic. And belated birthday greetings for Monday. I'm glad you're watching some Zweite Liga anyway. Mark?
Yeah, I'm going to do a hopeful prediction for next year in the Zweite Liga. the Bundesliga is, apart from Union being in it, is completely uninteresting for me at the moment. Working out who's going to win out of Bayern and Leipzig and everything, any amount of words that you use there would be wasted. There's just no point in doing it. However, what I would like to see is the following. So imagine the following, right? Hertha can stay in. That's not a problem. Hertha can stay in. I hope they do. I hope they do stay in. Imagine so Schalke go down, right? And Köln go down. And Bielefeld stay in, right? In the playoff. And then from the second league, Bochum and Kiel go up and Fürth lose and Fürth stay in the second league as well, right? And then at the bottom, Sandhausen and Würzburg go, and then from the third league, Dynamo Dresden, Hansa Rostock, and 1860 München come up next year. That would be the second league of doom. Dresden, Rostock, 1860, Braunschweig, Nürnberg, Pauli, Paderborn, Hannover, Düsseldorf, KSC, Hamburg, plus Schalke and Köln in the second league. Can you imagine it? Can you just imagine it? That would be amazing if that happened. God, I hope it happens. I really do. Or at least some of that. Next season's second league is going to be absolutely top. Absolutely top.
Your enthusiasm for that happening has me both grinning and almost wanting it to happen even more. So I am definitely imagining that happening. Baz, I know you've watched the Bundesliga probably a lot more than I never really used to watch the top flight, I have to confess, before Union got in it. I watched the Zweite Liga probably a hell of a lot more. But Timmers, I know you've watched probably the Bundesliga more than me. And are those fair comments about kind of the state of the title race? That does anyone really care whether it's Bayern or Leipzig, really?
I just did some research. VfB Stuttgart, Bayern München. VfL Wolfsburg, Bayern München. Borussia Dortmund, Bayern München. Bayern München, Bayern München, Bayern München, Bayern München, Bayern München, Bayern München. That, I just want to say that there was a time, and it's by now 8 or 9 years ago, that there was still a level of unpredictability in the German league, and it has completely gone, as Mark has said. So it's Bayern, and if you're lucky, they have one competitor. 2 years ago, it was Borussia Dortmund under Favre. Now it's the marketing construct from Leipzig. But in the end, you know that Bayern is going to win. And when you're talking about the state of German football or maybe even European football in general, I think there is, well, that's maybe a harsh word to use, but there's been a cancer growing, and it is the cancer of predictability. Like I saw the draw for the quarterfinals of the Champions League last week, and I couldn't care less whether Paris Saint-Germain, you know, owned by some oil company, or the state of Qatar is playing against the serial champions, I think, of Germany, stuff like that, because it has taken all the excitement and tension from the Champions League away and from the first Bundesliga away as well. I think, but the guys have to admit it for themselves, but that Kyle and Mark are so charmed by the second league because it's one of the toughest and most unpredictable ones, because you can almost relegate in 1 year, like happened to Paderborn, I think. And then the year after you can get promoted. And one of the reasons I think why people at Schalke are completely freaking out is that they are realizing that if they remain in the current state of complete utter chaos and the squad that has no structure at all, they realize that even with more money, they could go straight down to third league, if they would not clean up their act. So that's what I have to add to the state of Bundesliga football.
Yeah, I mean, I will reference Sunderland, because we all thought when we got relegated from the Premier League that would be a good chance to clear out and rebuild in the Championship. And I would be fucking shitting it if I were Schalke, because that Zweite Liga is hard, and it's very easy to see them becoming another Kaiserslautern, for example, and being in the third league. And Lautern, they haven't bounced back quickly, have they? They're still there, plying their trade. Mark, anything to come back to there from what Baz has said?
Yeah, just one final thing. This is probably maybe the last contribution for tonight. So I'm going to leave you with something that I saw earlier on this week in connection with that, with the lack of desire to watch the Champions League between Paris and Bayern. And just to come back to something that's going to make you want to rub your eyes out with bleach if you go online and see it. And that's the tweet from Qatar Airways that was on earlier this week. Like, the world will come to a standstill on Sunday when both of our partners, PSG and FC Bayern, complete for club football's most elite prize. Congratulations to both teams on reaching the final stage that we call the Clásico, with a Q at the beginning. A Clásico. Let the countdown begin. Tweet from Qatar Airways. Congratulations from your proud partners. It's like, if I had to slap my head any harder, then I'd put it through the wall with this. Is that just not everything that's bad with football at the moment? Just absolutely terrible, terrible stuff.
In a podcast about football, there is nowhere else to go after hearing that. I mean, that is just an absolute abomination. So, fuck Qatar Airways. There's a headline for the podcast. That's been a great podcast in the virtual studio. A pleasure as always. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Baz. And thank you to Mark. I think that, we're all kind of going to be looking forward to the derby. It's tough to have an international break, especially if you have to come on a podcast like our Dutchman and you've just been beaten 4-2 from Turkey. But there you go. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back again after the derby to talk through the issues. Let's hope we're smiling then.